Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Rebook, the podcast where we talk about wrestling storylines and men and women slapping meat. It's the best type of thing ever because pro wrestling is freaking awesome. I'm GB. That's Jake. We also have Matt here to talk all things pro wrestling. And boy, oh boy, has this been. That sound like a 50-year-old man. Boy, oh boy.
Oh, God, gee whiz.
Heavens to Betsy.
That was quite a week. But it was, man. It was a great week of pro wrestling. We had so much going on
from the
Elimination Chamber, which it's crazy because like the Elimination Chamber happened and then so much more happened on top of that just like at Monday Night Raw. At AEW side, we just had so many stories just continue to get pushed forward on both Collision as well as Dynamite. Heck, even Rampage was joining in on some of the fun and trying to give people a reason to tune into that hour of television on Friday. Yeah. So that's nice. But outside of that, though, man, I feel like the attention has just been all WWE and what they've been cooking for WrestleMania. What have you guys been enjoying this week?
Matthew, I defer to you.
So. Matt? Hmm? Yeah, okay. Actually, I should have started. I should have given a name to someone first. Come on.
Call Golden Boy.
Dude, he was so good.
Call Jake.
Somebody.
2024, and I don't have more than one contact in one phone and have heard of three-way calling. What? I'm sorry. We're starting right off with that because I was joking with my friend earlier. Oh, my God. That was the dumbest, best thing ever.
Yeah.
It was
like a weird flex. It was
so
like a
stupid.
But it was so, like, deliberate. It was so good, though.
It's one of those things. It's 100% deliberate. It is dumb. And over there, it doesn't make a lick of, like, logistical sense. You would never have a phone for one individual person. I guess a work phone and a private phone. I know that, but it was so.
Wait,
but
with the who's the work phone? It, who's the work sticker, phone and who's the private phone, man? Is Roman the work phone or is Rock the private phone?
I don't know. Batman had a phone just for Commissioner Gordon. So it kind of checks out, I guess.
It's the cellular version of the White House red phone.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The nuclear mm-hmm. codes and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I will say that I felt it, so to me it was just great physical physical prop usage, right? Mm-hmm. Because that was like the whole point of it. Obviously, we all know that he could just do a three-way call on a cell phone, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like the visual of him taking
but
out
I also
phone, and
I
it
also
has the bloodline on it. And then the visual of him taking out another phone, and then
I'm
it's got
also
the purple pull on it. It's just so silly.
I'm also not convinced that Paul knows how to do a conference call. Like, I think, I just imagine, like, on SmackDown, like they're waiting for Roman to get there. And Jimmy's like, nah, man, look, you do right here, ad call. Like, that. Like it just cuts into them doing that.
Yeah.
Like, you tap right there, ad call.
I hope that they address it next week. I just want them to address it. I just want them to be like, yo, like Jimmy just comes up to Paul. Yo, Paul. Come on, Oos, why you got two phones for, bro? Like, I just want that to happen. That would be so funny. I do agree. But it was a very effective segment. Like, I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about, like, everything later. But holy moly, like, everyone's, like, saying, like, because I'm seeing people online talk about how, people are saying this is absolute cinema or whatever. And it isn't. Let's be honest here. It's wrestling, you know? Wrestling can be absolute cinema sometimes, right? And I honestly think that what we are going to get at WrestleMania might actually be pretty close to that if they continue cooking the way that they are right now. But it's just really fun to see this this investment in long form quality storytelling.
Yes.
It's influenced so much of the industry, I feel like. And if that is the lasting mark that, which by the way, would be one of many that Roman leaves on the world of professional wrestling, I'm glad that one of those things was truly bringing back some real fun storytelling and not just be, I'm better than you and I want to beat you because I'm better than you. It's like, hey, don't get me wrong. Those are always fun. But after a while, you want some layers. And the Bloodline gave you that. The Bloodline era gave us so many layers. I'm just stoked for it, man. Jake, what about you? Anything you saw that you were into?
Man, I think I always enjoy when you see good storytelling when a title is not in the picture. And I think that we've had that with Imperium and New Day. I loved the street fight. I thought it was so well done. Everyone got their moment. There were nice callbacks to different moments throughout the feud. You know, when they held Woods' head down on the steps and Kofi came in and made the save. And like, I thought it was a fantastic match. Like I thought it was a great street fight. And I think it proves that not all matches like that have to, and don't get me wrong, do enjoy it. It does have its place of thumbtacks all over the ground and nail boards and whatever crazy shit. Like, it was very much like a less is more street fight. And I really, really liked that. And I think they really sold like the distaste, the severe distaste that they have for each other. I thought it was great. I thought it was very well done.
And Xavier Woods got to finally wear knee pads on the outside of jeans.
Yes, dude.
I know you've always wanted to do a match like that, Woods. We've talked about it.
I told
every
Cynthia,
wrestler loves that
I
shit.
I told my wife, I was like, I 100% guarantee you that this guy's going to come out with jeans and knee pads because it's the look from No Mercy. 100%.
90s as hell. 90s, early 2000s.
Yep. I was so happy for him. And it was great, too, because he came out with the San Jose Sharks like jersey. Mm-hmm. So there was like a thematic reason for it. But I just love they just took it off Matt Faz and were like, No Mercy.
Yeah, exactly. Just went straight hockey goon and had a blast with it. I mean, it's
absolutely
And there was something you said too, Jake, about like having a hardcore match that doesn't need to have like all those things like thumbtacks or like glass or those really the spots that bring out, you know, and don't get me wrong. Again, there's always going to be a place for it. I, till this day, think that Jon Moxley, Kenny Omega, that lights out match that they did was one of my favorites from both of them, just because it was like Kenny Omega proving that he could do that kind of thing. Jon Moxley just really just being the sadistic fuck that we all know him to be. So it was just absolutely brilliant. I enjoyed that. I like that match too. But there was something about this. There was something classic. There was something fun about how they approached this match. The emphasis of tables, really like pushing that forward. Even Woods getting the spot, shoving Kofi, being like, Kofi, get the tables. Like, you could just tell it was radiating with love of like a particular type of wrestling from a particular type of era. And also, most importantly, I think it made Imperium really look good. Like, look really good, which we're going to need because Imperium's the next, like, big bad, if you will. That's my perspective, but
that, you know, the two of them stand on their own outside of Gunther. Mm-hmm. Instead, they're not just his lackeys.
They built Ludwig Kaiser very well. Yes. Very well.
And so they needed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Couldn't agree more, man. It's been so exciting to see how these like tertiary feuds, if you will, are like bleeding into a lot of these other narratives, and we'll dive into what Imperium's doing next. But there is one match I did want to give a mention to, just because it was a legend. We got to see him wrestle yet again on American soil, and it was super fun to see Drew Nakayama go up against Bryan Danielson on Collision. There was a storyline reason for the match, which I did enjoy, and they were weaving it in. I do feel like sometimes AEW has a tendency to tell you the story as it's going on rather than, like, you know, preempt you going
letting
into it.
Because
when I saw the matchup, I was like, why is this happening? I'm a little I'm not mad about it because it's Jun Akiyama, you know. I'm not mad about this at all whatsoever. But I really wanted to understand why it was happening. And then we find out that this is Eddie Kingston's hero.
Yes.
He spoke about him at great lengths. The information I didn't have as a viewer
initially.
You
wrestled him a couple of months
ago. Not that long ago.
Right? Or like, last summer or something like that? And made
something
a huge deal out of it.
Yeah,
that was his dream match when he had it. So yeah, that kind of tied it all together.
And it was great. I just wish that I would have known, I would have been reminded of that.
Yes. 1,000%.
Not like I would have known, but I would have liked to have just been reminded of that. And that's just something I hope that AEW
is just a little bit more cognizant of as they do these one-off stories, because it did work out. I think that Kingston and Danielson will put on a masterclass at Revolution. It's going to be, because for my money, Bryan Danielson's top three wrestlers in the world, right? And I think that match is going to slap. But again, would have just liked just a little bit of a reminder of what was going on here.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, that was of course, good matches. Of course, let us know, by the way, if you're watching, listening, let us know what matches excited you this week. Could be anything. Could have been from any promotion. Didn't really matter. Just curious, because I always like seeing, you know, what you guys are watching out there. I'm sure we all feel the same way. So let's move on, though, to Dynamite. We got some AEW to talk about. Last week, there was a six-man tag. I have to find who it was, but it was like it was Danny Garcia, right? I believe it was.
No, the six-man tag was Joe, Swerve, and Cage.
That's what it was. Joe, Swerve, and Cage.
Versus RVD, Hook, and Hangman.
Yes, thank you so much. And last week, we were talking about it. We were like, oh, man, this feels, you know, a little bizarre, right? Random of a six-man tag. But, you know, Matt, I think it actually worked out. It built a lot of branching narratives at the end of the event. And also, it was really cool to just see Hook in a ring with just so many, like, high-tier wrestlers at this point in the game. Really just illustrating that Hook is, like, a big player in AEW, which I thought was pretty cool. Yeah.
I thought it was a mess.
Oh, okay. Let's go. I want to know.
Except for, I think, the storyline that mattered, which they did hit some great points on. I mean, just watch the match. It's clunky. It's clunky. No, he's a legend. I've wrestled him. I don't care about RVD in that scenario. I don't.
Yeah.
It
was very clear what he was there for, though.
Yes, of course. Right. I don't care about Bryan Cage, and that's an issue of booking him and his character as well. Hook is awesome. Is also just kind of slapsticked into there. Mm. That said, thank God they didn't lose the one storyline that mattered in that, which was that world title. They made moments out of that. Hangman and Page continually going for each other, even to the point of, I'm legally in the match against this guy. You know, it's a classic wrestling thing, but that MFer is right there, and I'm going to go get him instead. You know, but then they had the moment with the three of them and everything like that. They followed that through line with the world title pretty well, especially, again, just it was weird that Joe and Swerve were kind of on the same side, but the babyface and heel was very amorphous in that.
Nebulous,
Yes, but I thought the match, as far as a wrestling match, was a little clunky.
Okay.
I just thought it was just like random stuff. A lot of kind of half-botched spots.
That does happen in a lot of these six-man tags on AEW, though, I notice. It's like you always got something going on over here. And I have to imagine it's a very difficult thing to, like, coordinate. But it's been done, so, you know.
Thousands of times. Like, it doesn't have to be. I mean, maybe with the players involved, they just kind of did the best they could. Like, I'm not bad. I'm not saying the match is the shits or anything like that. Watch, please quote me on that and tweet it. But it felt just very. That's all I can think of. It felt awkward and clunky physically from the actual. Yeah. But the moments with Swerve, Joe, and Hangman, I thought came off really well and continued to push that forward. So I liked it.
Yeah. What about you, Jake?
I agree with Matt. Like, there were just moments where it felt like, okay, what were we supposed to do now? Or maybe we should do this and do this instead of like, it felt like they weren't sure at times what they were supposed to do. I don't know. It just felt kind of odd to me at times. Like something was, and to Matt's point, they also like, they gave 100%. I think it was just a situation of because it was kind of this random
hodgepodge.
It felt like that it was like, okay, how do we make this work? How do we, you know, mend all our styles together to make something coherent? And I think they did the best they could, at least for that time. I think if they had more time and there were, you know, honestly a little more forethought into it, I think it could have been better. Like that. I mean, the focus of all of it seemed to be Hangman and Swerve. And I think they kind of teased exactly something that I talked about here either last week or the week before of Hangman and Swerve forgetting that Joe is also in this match. And that being a problem for both of them as far as their dreams of holding that title go. And by the way, I loved Brian Cage's pants. The streets of Cage, God, yes. Pants. Those were fantastic.
They're so good. I mean, he gets it, bro. Great. He gets it. Yeah, yeah. I just want him to cosplay as like a random Streets of Rage, like
Minion. He's probably done it.
He had to have done it. You know, he's got the look down. So I do see what you guys are saying, and I looked at it from a different perspective of like what were their objectives, right? What were the objectives of the match narratively, or like what they were trying to accomplish? Which, by the way, there's a lot of things that matter in between all of that, which is very obvious where the holes are being poked in. But I think that where their objective was furthering this storyline, to your point, Jake, about the tension between Hangman and Swerve. I liked how they had Hangman really be this like manic, just madman with Hook and RVD, who are like the two chillest people, right?
Right.
So that felt like RVD's purpose in this match was him kind of just being like, because even in the promo before the match, Hangman's there and he's like, we got to do this and then we got to do that. We can't let Swerve beat us. And he was just like going nuts. You could see that he's like further and further descending into chaos. You could see it when he walks out. Like, he was on the face team. He was on the good guy team. And yet he is very much the bad guy in this situation, right? So that was, and I knew the moment that it was announced, okay, cool, RVD's taking the pin, because he could take the pin and he's perfectly fine. Because it's RVD and we all love him and he's always going to be great. So that's why, like, it served that role. Now, Hook's involvement in there, I think, was more to the tone of them just trying to continue to put Hook more in these, like, big matches. And then, of course, Brian Cage fits it because of Mogul Embassy, right? So you had that, which they are still technically...
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
Yeah, exactly. Which that is also a bad idea. Right. It's a bad problem there. Or, sorry, not a bad problem, but it is a problem.
I forgot about that. Yes, they are.
That's the reason why he was in the match, right? But they don't really do a good job of letting you know that, because Brian Cage has been so isolated from Swerve Strickland in these feuds, that it really makes the Mogul Embassy feel a little flat. That said, though, Prince Nana, I think, is also going to play a really big role in how this story goes, because it just feels like Swerve has a different objective than what the Mogul Embassy is like supposed to accomplish. Swerve wants to be a champion, plain and simple. He wants to be the best in the company. He wants to be the face that runs the place. It's very clear that that is his objective. Hangman doesn't want him to achieve that goal, because Swerve made Hangman's life a living hell. And it's a completely valid and justified reason to hate this guy. Unfortunately, he's dragging everyone down with him. And then to what you said, Jake, Samoa Joe proved this week he don't give a fuck. He don't care. He was just going to roll up in the ring. He's going to put on a great match. He's going to tap out whoever he needs to tap out, and he's going to get out of there. And that's literally what he did. There were no funny games. There were no shenanigans. Joe is one of the most believable champions that AEW has had, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way toward any other previous champion, but just he's a force. He carries himself very well in these promos, but in the ring, you know that you're fighting a tough SOB.
But it's not just
really
that.
Hard to take him down.
It's not just that, though. It's not just that, right? But it's not just like the physicality that makes Joe so lethal. It's he is smart as shit. He is so cerebral, and he thinks everything through. I mean, you just see him. He's just like stalking people, and he's just like, what am I gonna?
Yeah,
I don't know. And just picking his moment, and then he just drops the hammer. Like, that's what makes Joe so much more dangerous. Is he's not just this, you know? Like, it's like, you know, Brock Lesnar is always built to be this monster. He's just fed, you know. He's just fed person after person after person, right? But Joe, Yeah, Joe is dangerous because he thinks all of this through. He has thought through all these possibilities, and he strategizes and waits for his moment and manipulates. And like, that's what makes him so good, and that's what's going to make him such a problem for Swerve and Hangman.
Yeah, yeah, it's really Joe has really set himself apart. And I actually came out of this match, real talk, I was like, okay, Revolution, Swerve's probably going to win. That was like my perspective. I was like, I think that they feel like they could put the belt on him. After that match, now I'm no longer a believer. I am a doubter. Joe will win. He will retain his title because that is narratively the smart thing to do. I don't know where they go after Joe, but that's the best part about it. I just think that whatever it is with Swerve and whatever it is with Hangman, they cost each other the title. Swerve should not get the title just because he's having a hot run right now.
Yes.
The story doesn't lend itself to that. If they decide to go that way, if they decide to take the belt off of Joe and put it on Swerve, not the end of the world because it's still going to be great, but I think that they give themselves way more to work with by keeping the belt on Joe. And yeah, really just dropping in whoever they want into that story, because they have a lot of really good options, you know, from Danielson to Moxley. They got Kenny's not coming back for a little while, so I don't know if that's going to be.
I mean, you got Ospreay coming in.
You got
too.
Ospreay coming in as well. Jeez, you got Takeshita as well. That could be another great one for him.
And here's the thing, too, with Swerve, I think you're
Okada?
Just.
Okada? Sorry.
Yeah. Maybe.
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 There's no way he's at the title picture the moment he arrives. No way.
But with Swerve, the great thing is, I think even though it's super hot and everyone always goes like, now, pull the trigger. But like, and they do that a lot. And sometimes wrestling companies, we've seen them miss the mark. However, yeah. I truly believe, to quote my favorite two phone wielding wise man, I think we're only in...
Dual-wielding phones, baby.
I think we're only in, like, act one of Swerve on the rise. Because think about it. He's just kind of made this not even full, like, semi-babyface turn, mm-hmm. right? He was just, a couple months ago, one of the nastiest heels on the roster.
He just beat Nick Wayne to a bloody pulp, like, not that long ago.
Right. So I think you go into a scenario like this, I think... What Jake has called the past few weeks stuff and what we've talked about is dead on. These two, between Hangman and they explode. Samoa Joe takes advantage, wipes them clean, moves on to the next. And I think now you can start almost probably, God, the rest of the year. I don't know what I guess All Out or whatever in the summer would be their big show. But, you know, building towards one of these big shows, whether it's that one or even further, you have Swerve now kind of starting that baby phase, Daniel Bryan climb.
Yeah,
maybe getting like a Joe goes, no, you lost. You're back down to the start. Use the rankings or whatever. You're back down to the bottom, back of the line. Maybe
and then
I'll
you build a new
months,
story
and
where Swerve's got to like fight again. You know,
and then feed a couple more people the Joe because I'd love that. I do. I like that idea of that he is that presence. He is that personality. He should be that good 6, 8, 9 month, year long run. He could be one of those guys.
If they leave the belt on Joe for a year, not mad at all. Like it's probably the best case scenario, but also you just know that all those matches that he's going to have, they're all going to be good. Going to have good feuds, good stories, everything.
Just do Mortal Kombat with Joe Shao Kahn or Goro, you know, and just have Swerve fight through the rankings and the tiers until he gets back.
Ready. Fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
I mean, he's done clear fatalities already. Fatality?
Yeah, I was going to ask. So do we go fatality? Do we go babality? Do we go, you know,
friendship?
Friendship?
Friendship.
I'm actually not mad about that. I would love that. But you're right, though. That does lend itself very well to that, Jake. Like, you can get a situation where, like, Samoa Joe just comes back out again, and he's like, all right, you sent me these two chumps. I beat them. Who's next? Blam. Ospreay's music hits.
Right.
Blam! Okada's music hits. And then you have these guys come in, and again, Joe should still win. How you settle that, I don't know how, but Joe should still win. And then, you know, you just keep building from there. Dude, that'd be so
cool. The more I think about it, the more I do really enjoy the idea of Joe just making his own tournament and being like, oh, all these scrubs, I'm gonna pick people. And he just sits out there and watches everybody beat the shit out of each other. And then waits until he get, okay, now
bro,
this is the guy that I'm
sick,
fighting.
How sick would that be if they like gave him a throne on the side of the
stage, that's what I'm saying.
And then
yes.
he comes out, the crowd's like, Joe. He sits at his chair, he sits back. Chamber, I have a question for the panel, for my friends, okay? Are you okay with the fact that every single match that happened at Elimination Chamber, the result was basically telegraphed from a mile away? Are you okay with that? Or is it could it be a problem? Because I find it fascinating that Triple H gets Booker of the Year, and don't get me wrong, he's been making some really good calls, but it does feel like this build has just been so obvious. Like when you looked at Elimination Chamber, yeah, Drew was going to win it. Who else made sense in that situation? The focus has been solely on Drew. Right. Same thing with Becky. You knew she was going to win. The focus was purely on her. Did anyone really think that like Bianca Belair was going to win? Like, no. And that was the believable option. But apparently everyone wanted Tiffany Stratton, who had a great match, by the way. Mm-hmm. She was excellent in that cage. But I just think that like I don't know if that like I came out of it satisfied because it was a good show. I enjoyed the crap out of it. But all the results were predetermined. Jake, I want to start with you.
Did you just say all the results were predetermined?
Sorry.
I hate to tell you this, Shibi. Like, I didn't want to have this conversation with you.
Smarten him up.
Smarten
him up.
It's real to me, damn it.
We'll talk off air.
No, but you know what I mean. Like, it was so telegraphed is the appropriate term.
Sure.
Yeah, that's where I'm going with it. Yeah.
Sure. I kind of go back and forth on it. And I think where I'm settled on it now is it's like, if I go to Gordon Ramsay's restaurant, I don't get mad when he serves me beef Wellington. Like, that's his thing. I know that's what he's going to serve me, right? But he does it so well that I don't care. And I think that's what it's about. It's about the execution. If it's still executed well, but has the outcome that you expected, why is that necessarily bad? I get everyone loves unpredictability, but at some point, unpredictability does become predictable, right? Like, and so I'm fine with just some things just playing out the way you expect them to, and seeing from there what happens, because it's still like there have been a lot of things that have happened in the current storylines that let me give you this for an example. When Sami Zayn fought last year at Elimination Chamber against Roman, Roman was going to win that. He was going to win it.
I mean, you were deluding yourself if you think that Sami was going to win.
But holy shit, was that match good? It was just so, because there's still that part of you that's like, I don't know, man. I think he could maybe do it. You know what I mean? And it's because they executed
it so
well.
And they did
it
with Jay,
well.
Too.
Yes, they did the same thing with Jay. So it's done well, I don't have a problem with predictability. That's kind of where I stand on it.
Okay. All right. When done well, you don't have an issue with it. Matt?
Yeah. I'm going to echo a lot of that. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. I do think, especially in something like wrestling, which is every live weekly. God, not with two major companies that have live multiple shows, right, a week. A little bit of unpredictability, like, peppered in there is really nice. But when you start swerving for the sake of swerving, then you get David Arquette as world champion. I mean, like, you end up in scenarios like that. And it's like, that was shocking. That was wild. Nobody thought that would actually happen.
Yeah, but shocking, like, watching. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You end up in absurd scenarios because you're just like, I don't know, like, let's have this person win this, or this person's going to inexplicably turn heel. And it's like,
But they're shocking.
Just because it's a surprise.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. They're shocking because, oh my God, Bruce Willis has been dead the whole time. And then they're shocking of that dude on the bicycle just got creamed by a bus. Now, like, those are two complete, they're both surprising. But that's what I'm saying.
Yes, very different. One is like a really well set up narrative payoff. The other is just, holy shit,
died.
Which, hey, every so often, a holy shit here or there is kind of nice. But like, when it's every other week or something, you don't like that. I shared with you guys in our offline chat, one of my favorite examples, too. The Sammy is a great example, right? Shawn Michaels, Undertaker 2. Years ago. They started setting that up in like December, the Slammy Awards. Shawn cuts the promo. I want another match. So at that point, you know they're not saying, all right, we're getting Shawn Undertaker 2, right? It's going to happen. That's 4 months from now, but it's going to happen. But then they set up that whole thing of Undertaker saying no, and then Shawn trying to get it, trying to win the Rumble. He fails. Trying to win this match for the thing. He fails. He has to interfere in the chamber. It became such an intriguing story, even though 4 months ago, we knew they would run this match back. Everybody said it was the greatest match ever the first time. Let's run it back. We can get another one out of this before Shawn
retires. Twice in a lifetime.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, dozens of times in a lifetime.
That's actually very true. Yeah. For those two, yes.
but I mean, again, just an example of something you can lay out. We know it's going to happen. And the other tough part of it is just logistically, the chamber... at one point it was no way out, right? If you want, it's a hard thing to do, because if you want your, which we always talk about, we love the little bit more embracing of long-term storytelling, not hot-shotting something in 4 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Well, then you kind of got to start laying those eggs, laying those that groundwork at the Rumble or even earlier. Mm-hmm. And so by the time you get to that middle pay-per-view, which is the chamber now, you're going to have a lot of kind of, I see where we're going on our way to Mania. You just got to make it good.
Yeah, you just got to make it good. I do like that perspective. I think for me, the way that I and this people might be annoyed by this. I honestly don't know, but I'm very much like, I just kind of let it happen. You know, I don't really have like expectations either way. I just let them tell their story, you know, and then I reflect on it after the fact, right? It's like, when a lot of people were like getting pissed off over like Star Wars or whatever. And I'm like, okay, well, I like Force Awakens. That was okay. Let me go ahead and see what's up with Last Jedi. Wasn't really too crazy. All right, let's see how they close it up. Definitely didn't like that. Now I can comfortably say I wasn't crazy about it. There were parts that I liked. There were parts that I didn't like. You know, such is life. And that's kind of the way that I take it. So I'm in a similar boat with the three of you, all three of us. I'm seeing multiple people, crazy. But I'm in that boat where I'm just like, you know, if it's done well, who gives a crap, right? Like, it doesn't really matter ultimately. But where I sometimes struggle with it is when everything feels telegraphed. And that was where I took a little bit of an issue with the Elimination Chamber. Was like, for example, I knew that we were going to, like, however that match ended, like, however the match concluded at Chamber, I knew one way or another a RKO out of nowhere was going to be a big part of that, because they had already really telegraphed that the night prior when I think it was, I'm trying to remember. I think it was Bobby Lashley or something like that. It was like in the middle of the ring, just like hulking up or something. And then just in comes Randy Orton and boom, RKO out of nowhere. Yeah. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. So they're definitely going to do this. And then Logan Paul grabs the brass knuckles. He's like just really waiting in that ring, in the center of that ring for a very long time. And you're like, okay, cool. This is where they're going to fit the RKO spot. This is how they get, you know, like Logan Paul out of the match. Because I was the whole time I'm like watching, I'm like, okay, thinking how they were going to get rid of certain people in the matchups. I even was very confident that AJ was going to interfere in the match with LA Knight, because that just seems like they had to get LA Knight away from the title picture in a realistic manner. And that was the best way to do it. So it's like you knew that like shenanigans were going in. So it was a little weird to kind of just watch a match. And maybe that's just because of how I am when I watch wrestling. But it was a little weird to like watch that and be like, yeah, that person's probably going to eliminate that person. That person's going to do that. And then that's probably going to happen. And then it actually does.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Felt a little weird. But I'm also often told that I'm the best, worst person to watch wrestling with because I tend to call things before they happen. You know.
Right.
But I think we all do the same thing. So it's kind of hard.
No, I get that. And I think there's validity to that. Yeah. And that's down to less of like the overarching narrative. Because like we said, like we know we're going to go to these matches at Mania. We got to get there. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a valid criticism. And that's on the producer. That's just how we're putting this together. So it's not because, yeah, you don't want your match. You want your false finishes to feel legitimate. You want people to think, oh, my God, this could be the end. And it's not. And you take them on that ride. So if they're not doing that, then, yeah, that's a little bit.
I would have liked LA Knight to have just taken a pin. Sure. Honestly, I think it would have not had hurt him all that much. Mm-hmm. If anything, it could have set up something. But Jake, absolutely. What were you going to say? Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, one thing that I like about Elimination Chambers, it always does seem to me, it's not always about the destination, GB. It's about the journey, you know.
Right?
It's not always about who wins the Elimination Chamber. It's the other stories that are kind of built
from it.
It's the
memories we make.
It is. Elimination Chamber was the friends we made along the way. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There are a lot of friends.
But I think it set up a lot of different things with other people. I mean, even on the women's side too. I'm interested to see what's gonna happen with Liv Morgan now. She's pissed.
I was gonna,
and understandably so. And I like that. And she's pissed at Becky. And I think that's interesting. I think it's interesting to see where she's going to go with that.
You saw her face at the end of Raw in that match, mm-hmm. where she was looking at Becky. And she just like steel eyes, like she wanted to kill her.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. And then like you mentioned, I aspire to hate at the level that AJ Styles hated LA Knight. The man traveled across the world. To just ruin his day.
That was so good. People on Reddit were killing me, dude. Because they were like putting a thing, like one person had like the definition of hate in the dictionary, and then they showed it was a picture of AJ Styles. Like, it was just really funny. Like, I do think that is quite hilarious. That, yes, I'm glad that they did it and they had to finally get LA Knight away from it, but the way that they did it was just too good.
I like to think that he was travel buddies with R-Truth, and he let R-Truth take care of all the booking of the flights.
He probably thought he was Shawn Michaels.
Damn it, Truth, we're in Austria, not Australia, and that's what happened. I think that was the whole myth. Yeah,
that probably was. It probably was. It was excellent. But yes, to the point though, one thing I do want to point out about the Rhea Nia Jax match, that was Nia's like best match ever. Like she did exactly what she needed to do. And from a story perspective as well. And also want to point out, as a guy with frizzy hair because of, you know, Puerto Rican, good on you, Nia. Way to rock that frizzy hair. I love the new look that she's rocking right now. It definitely looks very like very raw. You know, it's like, you know, she's just angry and she just wants to like beat people up. That look change helps out a lot. And I hope they just keep going further and just redefine her look entirely if they want to, or keep it like this. It don't matter either way. But it's good to see that we got this like big guy heel, you know, monster character on the roster. And then you can also see, like, they're building up Raquel Rodriguez, like, in the background as, like, your next big, strong, you know, a character in the women's scene. Like, they're planting seeds for, like, matches or things and directions that they can go down the line. But Nia Jax, I think, really benefited a lot from that main event, even though she didn't win. She looked like a monster, which was what they needed, you know?
Speaking of unpredictable, frizzy hair?
Frizzy
where?
Me?
Maybe don't answer that. Maybe don't answer that. Maybe.
No. Well,
Jake was waiting so long to finish and tell that joke. He's like,
yeah.
Okay, let me explain.
I don't even know what you said.
We're considered Afro Latinos, right? We're Afro Latinos, so we have like the Taínos.
Yeah, I get the royal we.
We have like. We have nappier hair. And as a result, we have frizzier hair. When you wear it naturally, right? Like if I were to let my hair grow out, it would just be like this frizz ball with like bald spots on it, you know? So like that would just be like how it would look. But I could like legit grow an afro. That's not, by the way,
challenge laid out.
I tried during the break when Valorant wasn't going on and the season wasn't happening, and I got like a 2 weeks in, and then my wife comes into the room. She hands me my cut buddy, and she's like, "It's time to go, bro." Nah.
You just looked like an old tennis ball.
bro. Yeah, like plucked away, like a dog just ripped at it, you know, a little too much. Yeah, that's actually what it looked like, real talk. But anyway, I just really like that Naya's going for like a different look, a much more, you know, like aggressive tone. And she's just beating people up now, which is what she was doing before, but she's doing it even more now. Also, this whole thing about like she should be at WrestleMania. That's another really good angle. And also, that is a thing that, and Matt, you can correct me here, but I feel like they've never emphasized as much as they have needing to be at WrestleMania, like having a match. I felt like that really started to be like a thing that they were putting front and center with the Seth Cody thing, because Seth was like, "I need a match at WrestleMania. I need a match at WrestleMania." And he remember he was like in the boardroom just like trying to like get this match at Mania. I just don't remember in memory like everyone feeling so like pressured and every angle being tied to I gotta get to WrestleMania. So I don't know.
I think you're kind of right. I feel like I've heard it a few times here and there, and it's got
from like the big players
more,
right? Like Chad Gable saying it in an interview, for example, right?
And like I don't know how I feel about it, because it's like it's hard to deny, because it's taking a very real thing. That's the feeling in the locker room, right? It's like, brother, I just want to get booked on Mania. Like you almost you're like you legit. You're like, and hopefully not in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, because that's whatever they fucking did. Which it was great, and it got you a payday. But like you wanted a match, right? You wanted a match at Mania. Everybody's like, man, if I could eat 4-way match, tag match, singles match, ideally, just get on, you know, be featured on the card.
Get on the card and be featured.
So the only part I don't like about that within a storyline narrative perspective is that the idea of like, I don't think it's happened, but I never want it to come off like real life, which is just, I just want to be on the show, guys. Like, I never want it to come off like that. It should be like, I like the main event talk. I like, man, I want to headline the shit. I want to be on the poster. I want to be in the title match. That's good competitive athletic stuff, like a true kind of sport thing. I don't want it to sound like, man, like, I just want, I don't like hearing those, my Mania moment kind of thing. It's like, no, you should be worrying about beating someone and accomplishing a goal, whether it's settling a feud or winning a title or whatever it is. I don't like the idea of just like, I just want to be there to say I had a match there. Like, I just want to be on that card. Like, I don't want that to come into, unless it's an utterly specific story with some underdog, early NXT Bayley level character who, all just like sunshine and rainbows and want to see her get a hug. Like, that then it's fine. But like outside of that, you should be wanting to whoop someone's ass, settle a feud, or win a title.
Got it. Jake, how you feel about it?
I mean, I actually kind of agree with that. The more I hear him talk about it, I mean, you don't hear Pat Mahomes and LeBron James be like, I just want to get to one more.
I just want to be there.
Yeah. No, you want to fucking
win.
Win. Like that. Yeah, Matt, I'm with you. Like, fuck them.
Yeah.
Like, you want to go to WrestleMania. You want to win. You want to win a match. You want to win a title. Like, you don't want to just be there. National Championship.
I just want to be on the UFC 225 card, bro.
Right. Right.
What fighter ever says that?
Yeah.
Right. I went to a national championship game, Alabama playing Clemson, and Clemson kicked the shit out of us. And I fucking hate that I was at that game. It's the only national championship I got to go to. And I wasn't just happy that I was there. I sat there like this for about 3.5 quarters.
Sulking.
Because I was so pissed that I was there to see us get the shit kicked out of us. So, yeah, I agree. I want to see some more competitive spirit. And not just like.
By the way,
just to be nominated. Jake a copy.
We got to get Jake a copy of College Football 24, or else he will burn the place down. Just
that
so
is
that
fact.
Everyone is aware. That new college football game is coming out.
Get them their $600, baby. Get those athletes their $600.
Is that what they're getting paid?
That's it.
Not true. They also.
I thought it was.
They also get a free copy of the game on the console of their choice.
Damn right.
Free copy.
Let's go.
Bro, but here's the thing. That is going to take care of their families.
But here's the thing. In the first two days, I think about 6,000 players already opted in. So like they don't. They're like, yeah, let's do it. You know. I don't blame them.
$600 is a lot to a college.
Some are getting paid more to promote the game. They're getting paid like a few grand to promote the game and that sort of thing. But sure.
Okay.
That's a different podcast. That's a different podcast. Don't get me started.
That's actually Jake's college football podcast.
Yeah.
Make sure you go subscribe to that one. Yeah. I wish I had known more about college football. You grew up in the Bronx, so like it just wasn't really like a thing where I'm from. But
I will teach you, young Padawan,
for it.
Ooh. Take me under your wing.
So all right. So I think like Elimination Chamber, overall, good results. We knew a lot was gonna pretty much be as it was, but the event itself was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. It was sick to see an event in Australia. Funny that they did it in Perth. All of my Australian friends were like, why is WWE doing an event in Perth? Apparently Perth is just like empty. Like there's not really much there.
It's kind of like a B town.
Yeah. So it makes sense why they did it in Perth, because they saved themselves a lot of money by going to Perth. But anyway, really sick show. Definitely watch it. And worth checking out for sure. As far as though where we are with the main story of the season, as I like to call it, Cody Watch, where we see what is going on in the world of Cody Rhodes as he gets ready for the biggest match and the biggest WrestleMania, because it's called WrestleMania XL, of all time. I will say, though, do love the branding. Got to give him a lot of credit on that one.
Oh, hell yes.
It's genius. Like, the biggest WrestleMania of all time is XL. I can't wait for XXL, because then at that point, you're body shaming. So we'll see what happens, you know, and like where that direction goes. But
a fat-ass WrestleMania. XXL.
This is going to be a thick WrestleMania with 5 C's at the end of it.
Wouldn't XXL be 30? Because the numbers before are mine. If it's smaller, it subtracts from the. I don't know. I got to do that math later.
I wish. You're right. I honestly don't know.
There can be LXX. But that's.
Yeah.
That doesn't look as good. Well, I think this is also the only time they're ever going to use the Roman numeral branding. Because, you know, they've been going away from it clearly. They just call it WrestleMania and then that's it. But they're very adamant that we know that this is XL. Cody, he had a match against Grayson Waller. Massive shout out to Grayson Waller, because this was very much like a big opportunity for him. Mm-hmm. NXT guy. I don't know his full background, but I followed him a little bit in NXT, and I kind of caught the vibe, you know, chicken shit heel. It has the usual shtick of having his own show, like Miz, like Kevin Owens, you know, they would do that stuff. But his show actually has been the Grayson Waller effect actually has been kind of cool, because it's led to a lot of really fun moments, especially pertaining to Cody Rhodes, which he had highlighted multiple times. And then they get into the matchup and they had an overall good match. Grayson looked fantastic. Cody, of course, just looked like a superstar. Grayson took a crossroads like a champ, just took the full spin and everything, landed that bad boy like a god and ate the pin 1-2-3. It was great to watch. And then the shenanigans. Then Mr. Two Phones himself shows up. Paul Heyman with a security staff, which, by the way, he said it was the NYPD. But then after that, I think in his head realized that if he kept saying that it was the NYPD, they could get sued. So instead, he started to say that they were suspended NYPD officers. And then you notice on commentary, they stopped saying NYPD. And then just kept saying the suspended officers. And then they just kept going from there.
And they're just locals in black suits.
One of them was a guy on Tough Enough, I'm pretty sure.
You know, Well, I always think of that Simpsons quote. Who's there? Goons. Hiya goons. like they're just these nameless. Yeah, they're hired goons. They're Paul Heyman's hired goons. They're not bloodline. They're not whatever. Yeah. They're just tonight's hired
goons. I felt like the NYPD reference was a little bizarre to say
it
that.
It is very strange.
But it's a very Paul Heyman thing to do. I don't think he really cares all that much. That being said, though, let's talk about what came from that. Cody, I think at this point, one of the problems that we were kind of seeing come to fruition, at least for me, was that Cody was kind of looking a little bit like a punk in this whole situation. Stepped aside so that The Rock can fight Roman. That was weird. Gets slapped by The Rock. Doesn't do anything with that. That was weird. Flies all the way to Australia for what honestly could have been an email. That was also a little weird. And then finally we start to see that Cody Rhodes from the AEW feud, the first feud with Chris Jericho, where, I mean, he was white hot, if you guys remember that feud. It was freaking good. And it was that fire, that drive, that the fighting spirit that we always like to see. And then the final line when he goes, "The bloodline isn't hunting me. I'm hunting the bloodline." Crowd pops. Everyone goes crazy. Let's discuss, though.
Rorschach, baby.
Yeah, let's discuss how this played out, how the whole situation worked out, and also was it effective in really elevating Cody and making him not feel like a punk? Or do you guys even feel like he was looking like a punk? Jake, we'll start with you, bud.
It's a good point. I haven't thought about, it hasn't really crossed my mind of like, boy, Cody looks like a bitch. It kind of did a little bit when he just let Rock come in and have the match. But since like it has kind of felt like he's starting to show more initiative, which I do really like, and it kind of built, right? Because I don't know if it's because of lack of certainty of where the narrative was going, or if it is telling a story of Cody maybe was a little unsure of, well, shit, maybe, you know, now The Rock's involved.
He did acknowledge that in the promo.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, now it kind of feels like he's turned a corner and has been like, no, I'm going to own this and I'm not going to let anybody take it from me again. And so I kind of like the direction it's heading, but I think the only time that it looked bad was when The Rock was first pivot. Brought in. Yeah, I think yeah. that's yeah. that. But since then, I like it kind of felt a little slow because I think they were trying to figure it out. But now I think they're hitting their stride with Cody's just going to take charge. And I like that. I think it's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I think for sure the promo Monday was, I think, a little bit of a step up, and it kind of, I had a similar feeling, I think, to you, GB, where I was like, and I always, because I have a bad problem with, like, I will get suckered in by the content. Like, sometimes I like to say F you to the audience, which is not good. But, like, I'm just like, oh, man, if it's good, if the content is really good, like, which the promo, the passion was there, or the performance was good, but I'm like, this is also heading into the hugest match. Let's listen. And like when he hit that line, there's a huge pop. The people are still with it. And that was the other thing I was worried. I'm like, when they pivoted and went so hard with Cody, I'm like, are we going to wean off this? Like, oh, you did what we said. It's that classic, like,
yeah,
I wanted you before. And now that you want me,
like
you're
know.
Okay. You know what I mean? So, but
oh,
still
but that
with-
girl.
Oh, we didn't mean, not exactly. like that. Not like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
More as a friend.
But no, it's a- Exactly. So I think, but they're with it, and like it did give him a little bit more of a little seasoning, as we say, a little bit of an edge. And I mean, we're also, if we're talking about developments and everything, though, like we've walked over at that. Yeah, to your point, it could have been an email, but
yeah,
he lays out a challenge to The Rock for
That's
a
true.
Match.
In yeah.
theory, that I think is huge. Because we have to think about this. Something like that doesn't get thrown out.
When was the last time that The Rock was challenged?
What I'm saying is that something like that doesn't get thrown out without there being approval and plans for it.
Mm.
So that means in the book somewhere, they have this penciled in somewhere. Yeah. And the question for me is now, where is this fitting in? Because you've laid it out there. It has to happen. It's not. I don't see it happening on some SmackDown between now and Mania.
Nope.
It's got to be Mania.
The first time right? Rock walks onto to that ring and wrestles, it just has to be a WrestleMania.
It has to be.
You have no other choice.
There's no way they're doing it Fastlane. Like, right. They're not doing that.
Right.
It's called Fastlane. They're not doing that.
Yeah. My question is now, you know, is this, and I'm going to spin foil here for just a second. I feel like we could see a recreation of Daniel Bryan WrestleMania 30.
Oh.
Throw out the channel. Because the immediate answer is, no, night one, The Rock. Night two, Roman Reigns. I don't think they do that because it's whatever it is. It would be, I think they're going to give like a main event to, I think, Rhea and Becky. And I think they should, even though it's not the strongest story. I think it's just great to headline
you
the
think,
women.
Oh, you think,
women
oh, one of the nights.
One
you
of
think
the nights.
One of the
like
nights.
Night
okay,
one.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was going to say, like, I don't know if they'll do the Sunday Rhea and Becky, even though.
No, I think like night one would be good. Cause I think it's good to have the women highlight one of the night. I think it's good for the company. It's good PR. And it's good to keep pushing women to the forefront. And they're two of your biggest stars.
Yep.
So, just real, I'm curious what your guys' thoughts on this would be. The Rock comes in. He's coming back to SmackDown this Friday or something like that. You know, we did Cody or your Rudy Poo little challenge, cute little kid, whatever, talks him down. Maybe avoids it. The issue gets pressed. Rock plays a little bit into pulls my TKO board member strings. Cody, fine. You want to slap me back so bad kind of thing. You want to hit this so bad. You want to finish this story. Go through me. Go through the bloodline. Fine. Night two, your main event with Roman Reigns. I pulled the strings. You don't get that match unless you beat me first. And now Cody's got to run the gauntlet night two of WrestleMania. Got to beat The Rock at the beginning of the night. The biggest star in the world of entertainment before he can scale the mountain of Roman Reigns and the world title. Do you think that fits or do you think that's overloading or what? I'm curious what your guys' thoughts on that would be.
Jay, why don't you take a stab first.
Pass.
If you want. Let me let
that marinate. I'm doing some story math in my head right now. Go ahead,
Jim. Okay. All right, fine. I'll take it. So here is I do think that I like that angle because of the situation we find ourselves in.
Sure.
If Seth Rollins wasn't so prominent in this story. And I think that that is where they're going to cover themselves. Because the thing is, right, is Cody came out, issued a challenge to The Rock, one-on-one. He was very clear. He said, one-on-one, I want to take you on, Rock, right? And then that's when Rollins, like, stepped in and was like, dude, you know that no matter what happens, you're never going to take them one-on-one. That's just not happening, right? So you need to find a way to get Rock and Cody in a match together, that makes sense. Doing it like that, I don't know if it makes sense only because Cody won the Rumble and he earned, like, that is the rules that they set up. Now, if what you said with the TKO board member thing and if they try to go corporate Rock with it, then
right,
yes,
yeah.
You give yourself a really good angle, and it is a direction that they can go in. But I do feel like at times, you know, or rather not at times, but I do feel as if like what was happening was diminishing the importance of the Royal Rumble. And then Cody won the Rumble and then they brought it back into the forefront. So then to do that again, kind of rediminishes the point of the Rumble, which was to, you know, like have your definitive number one contender.
Sure.
But I'm not mad about the stipulation. Where I think will happen though, is we're going to get a tag team match Saturday. It'll probably be the match before the card, or it'll be the first match on Saturday. And it'll be Rock, probably Solo or Jimmy, one or the other. Whoever of those, they could just, you know, have lose, right? Because there's no chance in hell that Rock is going to lose.
Right.
And then you have like, maybe something happens where, like, they beat the crap out of Seth Rollins, and then that is – because, again, they're kind of alluding to that as well, that, like, you know, Rollins could lose because he's overlooking Drew because he already beat Drew before. And we could talk more about that in a little bit, but it does feel as if, like, that's the story Rollins is going in, and the best way to get that would be a vicious beatdown, like at the end of a tag team match, because Rollins is like adamant on taking out the Bloodline or whatever. That would be the direction that I think that they're going to go. But it would be cool if they attach a stipulation of, like, if you don't beat us in this tag match or in this match, you can't fight Roman. If they were to do it, it wouldn't be the end of the world. It'll still be a hype as shit. But, yeah, I just feel like the Royal Rumble should be untouched. It should be untainted.
I agree with that, actually.
It is, yeah. It is the most – in. It is the best WWE, like, thing, right? Like, they're the only ones that do it this way because they're the only ones that can. And they have such a great way about it. They put so much value into it. It's been a staple of the company for so long. So it was very bizarre that they took it in that direction. And they were like, Cody's just going to step aside and go fight Rollins. Because why not? It was just so freaking weird. And we all know the reasons why. But, yeah, that's my take. Jake, what's yours? You have now had time to marinate.
Pass.
God damn it,
no,
Jake.
I'm just
Jake.
No, I was
kind of.
No, I agree with what you said. I like the Royal Rumble continuing to mean something, but I don't know. What I'm trying to figure out too is, like you said, if he does have a one-on-one match, I'm trying to think if there's a way, like, you know, there's. You know, he, like you said, it was very specific when he said one-on-one. So if somebody else comes in and interferes, and can he still go if he wins by disqualification? Like something like that. Because like you said, too, I don't know that Rock loses that either. But I think maybe the whole point is not necessarily for him to beat Rock, but for Rock just to beat the shit out of Cody and make him soft for Roman. So if it comes in and it's just like the Rock immediately is like, oh, this is a one-on-one match. Sure, it's a one-on-one match, but here's a chair, here's a table I'm about to put you, like, and just and destroys him with no regard for the rules, no, like, and just doesn't give a shit about actually winning the match, but rather just breaking him down. Like this is the Bloodline teaching. You know, teaching him a lesson of we're going to torture you. You want to tear us apart? We're going to tear you apart limb by limb. This isn't just going to be a simple match and pin you and move along. I want to take you out. I want you to learn you don't fuck with the Bloodline. I'm going to hurt you. I'm going to maim you. I'm going to embarrass you. And this is going to be worse than the loss that you suffered at the last WrestleMania. So I can see it being something like that. Mm-hmm. And really just continuing to stack the deck against Cody in a new way. So that way it's not just a carbon copy of the Daniel Bryan story from 10 years ago. So I think, like, I like the idea, and it's kind of I like yes anding that idea, you know, yes. And what if we did this, you know, and
sure.
So I think you've got a seed of something that could be really interesting at WrestleMania. I do like that.
I got it. As you were talking and I have a theory.
Pass.
I don't know. Pass. it could. So you're right. Whatever happens, there needs to be, like, this Friday, we're obviously going to find out the direction that this is going.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and if I'm right, oh boy, I hope we clip this and it does really well on the internet. Okay. So remember when years and years ago when WWE spun out their second show and they decided to call it SmackDown. And who was the person that was popularizing that phrase at the time? It was The Rock. The Rock layeth the smacketh down on your candy ass. That was always a thing. SmackDown is Rock's show. Mm-hmm. And it has been Rock's show since it was created. Because it's literally a phrase that he popularized. So, he comes out on Friday. And he's going to say, Cody, you want to fight? We'll fight on my show, and they'll have a main event. And I said something that you wouldn't have this match, or the first time we see Rock come out in trunks or whatever would be Mania. No, I actually think that they're gonna do the match, And then, in very typical Bloodline fashion, shenanigans. Because Cody is hunting the Bloodline. So the way that I would go about doing it is, if Cody's hunting the Bloodline, you got to get Cody exposed out in the open. What's the best way to get him exposed out in the open? In the center of the squared circle. So that's when you have Jimmy come in, Solo come in, everyone just coming in, just causing problems. And that's where you beat him up. That's when Seth Rollins' music hits. Burn it down. He's running down. Everyone's hyped as hell. People are just, there's a mad chaos and carnage in the ring. Tag team match at WrestleMania. That's what I think we're going to get. I hope I'm right. Because if I'm right, then this show should get, this, then we need
writing
to,
credit?
Then we need to, yeah, we need to get writing credits. It needs to just be like, you know, like the new guy, Rob, and then under it, rebooked. Just like right underneath it. I don't know. But what do you think? Does that sound like a thing that
you
they
know
could
what?
Do?
The more and more Jake was talking, I was like, you know what? Yeah. And I almost had the same thought, GB. I was like, especially, I think that would be a hell of a Friday. Because
you get a ratings
Mania,
pop for SmackDown.
A huge pop.
You get a fucking
Rock wrestling on SmackDown for the first time in 20 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Fine. It's going to be this. And then you kind of go in Jake's direction of, fuck you, Cody. We're not doing this straight up. Blah, blah,
yeah.
blah, blunder.
Beat the crap out of it. And make it
heading
like brutal.
Right into Mania.
It's got to be like, brutal.
It's will he make it kind of feeling.
Cody needs to bleed. Like it needs to be like a real, like people need to be silent in that arena.
It needs to be.
Rock needs to.
It needs to borderline be when he. Yes.
I want rib tape on Cody for Mania.
That's right, dude.
Right?
Give him the rib tape. Give him
give me that
fucking tape on the shoulder, dude.
I'm coming, brother. I'm coming down that aisle. No matter what. You know what I mean? Hell
it needs it needs to almost have the same reaction of when he took that jacket off in Hell in a Cell against Seth, and you were just like, Jesus Christ. Like, that's
There's
the feel
no
it,
way.
It should have. Yeah.
Because they got to make Cody Rhodes look
if he's
like
willing
a
to get an amputation.
That would really
Let's explore
sell.
It. Let's explore it. You know? Hey, CGI can cover anything these days.
Right.
Guys, you know?
Just a green sleeve
And you see WWE's AR, I mean, they could pull it off clearly, you know, with the Roman graphic. You know what I mean? Like, they can do that shit. It's just too good. Man, I'm really interested to see what happens in SmackDown this week. It's going to be really fun. Again, they're cooking, right? To go back to the thing that I was seeing, like, people talk about, like, everyone's acting like this is absolute cinema. I mean, look, when you think about professional wrestling, this is probably, like, one of the closest you're ever going to get to, like, long-term consistent booking that isn't, like, that isn't – and you can make the case that it was boring in certain aspects. And I will agree, when Brock Lesnar was involved, it was boring just because it was just getting repetitive after a little while. Like, yes their match at SummerSlam was awesome. That match was crazy. The flipping of the ring, the tractor, all that
stuff. I was there.
Wild.
It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. You were there. You were there, I think, with my brother, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Like, that match was incredible. But honestly, like, I'm just glad we moved on from that. And we actually have a real story that's really captivating people, that's engaging people in a way that we haven't really been engaged with professional wrestling since the days... Hot take, since the days of the Attitude Era. Honestly, like, I haven't cared this much about a storyline. And I watch a lot of wrestling. And I did cool down a little bit in the Ruthless Aggression era. And I didn't really, but there was a reason for that, you know, because I just felt like everything was very flat, wasn't really enticing me, because it was still old style storytelling of wrestling. But they removed, like, a lot of the grit. They removed a lot of the, you know, the hardcore aspects of it, or just like when for good reason in a lot of those elements. But I just felt like it was like a toned down, if you will. And now they found their voice again and they're ramping back up. It's exciting, man. It's a good time, dude.
It is. They are cooking on all cylinders. I can't take that away from them.
Are you feeling that, Matt, on like the TNA side, like, as well? Just kind of curious on, you know, like, you guys are also cooking up some storylines out there too. We were talking about Mustafa Ali
week. And congrats to him, man. He deserves that.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
happy for him.
It's I think we're going in a really good direction with a lot of people. I think we had a hell of a kind of relaunch with Hard to Kill earlier this year. I think, like, it's one of those things. I think we're going to – I don't think we've even hit our groove yet as far as certain some of the stories. But, like, we kind of had this reset at the beginning of the year, and I think we're going to start cooking into some good stuff in the next couple of months. The roster is insane.
Yes.
Insanely talented.
It's wild how many good wrestlers are in TNA, and no one is like, I should say no one. A lot of people are giving them the flowers.
Yeah.
But like
not
more
enough.
And more people need to start like really appreciating what's going on over there, because I'm so optimistic on like what's going to happen as far as like, you know, with Nemeth there, with the, do you mean Josh Alexander is just like, an incredible,
ridiculous,
just
ridiculous.
It's just very, again, yeah, I mentioned top three wrestlers in the world, and he's in that list for me. Yeah. So, you know, that's just how highly I think of the guy. Yeah, even things like Eric Young, you know, I've been loving what we've seen. When PCO came back, and that man's
an insane human. Like, I love him.
Oh, dude,
so
I could watch a PCO match any day of the week. I just don't know how he does it.
I don't know how he walks.
Yeah, okay, good. Walks. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
He's been wrestling
30
plus years, and he does swantons under the apron like nightly. And he's gigantic.
Yeah, he's a big guy. How tall is he? He's like 6'2" or 6'3" or something?
He's a little shorter than me. So he's like 6'1".
Okay.
He's not super
tall,
but he's just wide as a door.
Yeah.
And just huge.
Also, the Frankenstein gimmick is incredible as well.
The new entrance is cool as shit.
Yeah, it's great. It genuinely
is.
The
big shout out I would give, and I wanted to mention this on our thing, would be we just had No Surrender. TNA just had No Surrender this past week in New Orleans. Really good show, top to bottom. But again, we talk about story on this show, and there's something I'd like to point out. In the world title match, we introduced a match, and TNA is kind of known for this throughout its history of introducing matches that are kind of convoluted.
Oh, yeah.
When this was proposed, I was like, it's always hard, especially as a commentator, like, here's a match. We now have to have like four lines of dialogue to just explain the rules of the match. That's a hard sell.
Yeah.
So I will go out on a limb though and saying this was that. It's a mouthful. It's very convoluted, but I think it is the best example of a intricate match as far as storytelling goes. What it broke down to was essentially an I quit match, but your backup, your teammates say when you quit, they throw in the towel for you, which is looking back on it,
it's Rocky IV.
It's all we should have said.
So
the whole thing was, it was no disqualifications. Each guy has two guys at ringside, no DQ, but the guys at ringside can't get involved or else the title does switch hands.
So interference does cause a title change, which is a big one. Okay.
Yeah, so you have to put that. And the only way you can win is by getting your opponent's allies to throw in the towel on their behalf.
I do like that.
So it's a lot. It's a mouthful. It's a lot to write down to put on the screen. But the drama is really well done. And it was great because you had the two groups. Was Alex Shelley with Kushida, his longtime tag team partner. Kevin Knight, his protege, one of his guys, his friends, his family, right?
Yeah.
But then there's Moose, who has Brian Myers and Eddie Edwards, two guys he just teamed up with. It's business. They're like, they're kind of like old school corporation. They walk around in suits. They're the top guys. But
are they like the new main event mafia, so to speak?
Let's not say that. But they're the elite. They're the rich top guys. They're kind of like Evolution.
Okay, all right, which I understand. Yeah. I was using a TNA reference, but it's more Evolution than never mention a name of Main Event Mafia ever again.
And so, like, the dichotomy there of, like the whole idea is, who do you trust?
Yeah.
And me as the heel, I actually had a great point to stand on in this one, thankfully, because often I don't, is the idea of, like, Moose has the advantage here. I'm like, this is business for them.
Yeah.
This is purely business. They're all on the payroll, like whatever. If Moose gives you an order, all right, I don't get paid if I throw in the towel. I don't they don't care about each other getting paid.
They'll let him die.
Because it works out for them, you know. Right. Like, he gets hurt, that's fine, you know. They're the next up.
this is Alex Shelley's disadvantage. His friends care about him.
Yeah.
They don't want to see him get hurt. That's emotional connection, that is going to hurt them in the end. And it did, if you go and watch the match. But I'm like, it was a really great... I wish they would have had more time to build it up in the lead up. We didn't. I don't think we had enough time to fully tell that story. But
yeah.
It was a great example of that encased in one match. Again, it's a little convoluted, but really well, like, dramatic storytelling.
What was the name? The name that they gave for it?
The No Surrender match.
That is cool. So, because you know, you have your I Quit match. Yep. Which is a different format. Your No Surrender match. I really like that.
Because it also opens
up a lot of opportunities for, like, remember the MJF Cody situation when MJF mm-hmm. tossed in the towel, and that led to that whole situation bubbling up. And then you put like a white meat babyface in that situation, and you give them like a tweener babyface heel character, just like they did with Cody and MJF. You got yourself another feud coming out of that match.
And like, I think you cool. will. Like if you watch TNA going forward, we just did some tapings. They're going to continue to play on that. So yeah, that's one of my things to highlight from from the weekend.
Oh,
so
man,
I have to say, check it out.
Now I'm just thinking about how do they get to pick the two people that are ringside, or
they did.
Oh man, because now I just like now all I'm thinking of is if I was like if I was a face, getting two heels that don't like me, because then they have the choice: do we screw him out of the title or watch the shit get kicked out of him? That would kind of be a fun dynamic.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and
you can always go with like you said with the corporate angle. You also have mm-hmm. the team angle, mm-hmm. where you know you can easily just have it be like a prominent tag team, which you had like Kushida and Alex Shelley, which they were tag teaming for a little while. But I love that. That's really cool, and I think that that's really what we just need a little bit more of. You know, just more creativity in some of these matches. There's always going to be plenty of room for the tried and true, but it's always nice to see something new. And TNA has been that promotion that I felt has always just tried to do something new, for better or for worse.
Yeah, so not everything works, but
and you know what? It's if everyone's bought in and tries it and it doesn't work out, then you move on from there. It's like Money in the Bank, right? Like they started that off. It was very much a loose concept. They weren't quite sure which direction they were going to go. Now it's a central part of the company.
Now it's a pay-per-view.
Right, for WWE. Yeah, now it's a whole pay-per-view, right? Same thing with Elimination Chamber. Even though there was a lot of conversation about whether or not pay-per-view should be named after
I don't like
the match itself. Yeah, you don't like it? I didn't mind Elimination Chamber, just because it reminds me of Royal Rumble. So that was the only reason why.
I think we talked about this a little bit, and I think it's better now. I think Chamber works because it's part of that. It's figuring out who's going to Mania.
Extreme rules. Right?
But like, I don't like TLC. I didn't like Hell in a Cell.
I don't like Hell in a Cell.
I didn't. Mm-mm. No, I don't like putting matches on that you like, regardless of where the story is taken.
That's just a big ass cage match, you know. Like,
and that should be a blow off for a blood.
Yes, game. Yes.
You know what I mean? 100%. Not like, oh, I won the number one contendership last week, but it's October, so you have to have a Hell in a Cell match.
It is a last resort. There is no way that things can be resolved between these two people unless you trap them inside a structure and let them murder each other. That is the only way. Like, that's how it started. That's how it should be. That's how every Hell in a Cell should go. Yeah.
And you know what? If you want a good October, name, you can always just call Halloween Havoc, baby.
Wait a minute.
They own it.
I mean, they do use it for NXT.
They do it for NXT, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't do.
What would you do?
You don't do Cody Roman in a Hell in a Cell, do you?
Good.
No, I think you do Rock Cody in a Hell in a Cell.
I don't think Rock does a Hell in a Cell.
I don't think Rock would do
that
a Hell
actually,
in a Cell.
That too. That too.
Yeah.
I don't think
he feels he'd be in a good spot.
But what would be, I guess, like, because what would be the objective of it when, like, they're already fighting so many times? Like,
just because it keeps the bloodline out.
There's
it keeps no interference. Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, it's fascinating. Definitely, for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see where things go, and it's going to be fun. We got a little bit more to go. Might as well just dive into this, and then we got two big angles. We talked a lot about WWE, so I want to shift it over for a second. And, we'll keep this one really quick to AEW. Sting's final Dynamite. Revolution is rapidly coming up. I just wanted to give some love to the Icon just because I do like this feud that has developed. The promo that Sting gave last week was just classic Sting. It was amazing. It's everything. Like, it's just him speaking from the heart.
Can I speak on that?
Go for it.
I mean, I've mentioned to you guys, I don't know if anybody else knows out there, so, like, I don't have cable, so, like, AEW is a little bit more of, like, a hodgepodge for me. I gotta find the clips online and stuff like mm-hmm. that, right? I'm watching a lot of 8-minute clips and stuff like that. Full segments when I can, and so I'm keeping up, but it's a little hodgepodge, but man, I watch it, and I thought this feud was decent. It gave some importance to the tag titles, it seems like. I mean,
yeah,
I'm
the tag titles are definitely set dressing, I feel like. This is more about Sting than anything else.
Yeah, and right. I'm 50-50 on the EVP Young Bucks, like how much I like that as a character thing. Like, it's all right, but I'm not kidding you when I tell you I watched that promo with Darby and Sting, just that filmed in a church
in the red
or whatever, and it was 3 minutes. It wasn't super long, and it's was really, really good. And in a way, if we talk about it, it was the antithesis of the Wardlow promo, in my opinion. And it was 10 times more effective.
Oh, really? I like this. Okay, crap. Keep going. Keep like, cooking, Bobby. Keep going.
It's one of my favorite things. One of the things we learned early on from Dusty Rhodes is, like, again, it's that, not that it can never have it. Why are you yelling? Why are you yelling? And from the moment that promo with Darby just looked in the camera, and Darby's got a presence about him. For being one of the smallest guys on the roster, that's why he's been so successful.
And he's not the cleanest when it comes to his delivery, I feel like.
He did really well there.
But this one was great. He needed that.
He was locked in. Yeah. His part was just, you know, the intro and everything like that. But it was just that very conviction. I believed it was grounded in what he said. He didn't overplay his hand. And then Sting came in, who, like... Sting's had some weird characters in it. I never think of him as, like, a promo guy, though.
Yeah,
like,
true.
There's Crow Sting from TNA, which is wild, and, like, or, excuse me, Joker's TNA.
Joker Sting,
and,
yeah.
Joker Sting,
like,
was fun.
He's always had some wild characters and stuff like that, but I just never thought of him really, like, truly as, like, a stick guy. But, man, like, it was, again, so grounded. Both emotionally and then, but then... with some aggression in there, some understated aggression, which is not something a lot of wrestlers are good
also,
at.
Also, small minor detail. Don't know if you noticed, but the pictures and everything that they're using is Red Face Sting. Mm-hmm. And I think we are going to get either a version of Red Face Sting, or we're going to get he's going to blend it in. I have a feeling his face paint is just going to be an amalgamation of old, like, 80s Sting. Maybe like white here, the classic Sting look here, that being in red. If they do something like that, I really just hope Sting just has so much fun with it. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah.
But,
no,
yeah.
But all that, I thought it was absolutely excellent. I thought it was really well done. And done, so much was done in 3 minutes.
Crazy.
Yeah, like, I thought it was a great promo. I mean, it's like Matt said, you know, there is a time and place for the high energy, over the top, yelling loud, getting my point across. But there's something about, like, this was so beautifully understated. Like, and I think one guy recently who's been very good at these types of promos was Bray Wyatt. When you talk like this and you're not yelling, it forces people to listen. It forces them to pay attention to what you're saying. And that is where you can convey more emotion in your promos than you can when you're just up here all the time. Like there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to go. And you pick up on subtleties on things that they're saying. Like, it was fantastic. Like, and you're right. It was 3 minutes, but I felt that 3 minutes, like, I could feel it. And it was just, man, it was, I thought it was a fantastic promo from Sting.
It really was. But I'm actually, I want to unpack what you said though, for a minute about Wardlow. Only because I had a different impression of Wardlow in that situation. I felt really good about him finally just speaking with a lot of passion like that. Because I do feel like as a character, Wardlow's really been floundering to and struggling to 100%. Find a
kind of stale,
like where his place is. Yeah, he's, mm-hmm. he staled out, and it was. And look, you know, no sugarcoating it. The situation with MJF, the lead up to their matchup, the situation that followed afterwards, all of that stuff definitely cooled Wardlow's run. It to the point that you mentioned earlier, Matt, about when reality blends in. I'm wondering if that is the case here, you know? Like, because there was a lot of, like, he was just really angry, you know, and really frustrated. And he sounded believable. I was like, yeah, this guy's genuinely pissed off. And then after that, they announced the, I don't know the name of it. Meat matches or whatever, which... If I'm understanding what the concept is, sign me the hell up. But yeah, I thought that I felt like he needed something that was going to make me at least semi-care. And he kind of gave me that. I want to know what happens in this meat match.
Which is just a three-way with big guys.
What is it? Hobbs, Wardlow, Archer. Archer. Holy shit.
Three underused big guys, too.
True. So and you know what? Honestly, throw Brian Cage in there as well, and I think you got yourself a banger of a matchup, man.
Sure.
You know, but yeah.
But no, to your I agree with everything you're saying. But just to the point of that I was making before, the only issue, it's kind of like what I talked about last week with The Rock. The content of Wardlow's promo was good. I think he needed that venting moment, that needed that I'm pissed off moment. It just a little bit, just delivery. It just the execution.
Yeah.
I just wish there was a lot of like, if he could have ramped up to like a big and then at the end, like, fuck you, I'm the fucking man, or whatever it was.
Boom. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That would.
But it was a lot of like, it was like yelling, and then he kind of stopped, and then he yelled again, and then it felt too pro-wrestling-y. Content was good. I just wish it would have been delivered and executed a little bit more, like, ramped.
Just a ramp up.
Yeah.
Just
like how he said it undercut it. What he said is kind of how I felt. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
It's not bad by any means, but I just think it could have been really good, and it was it was good.
Well, we'll keep our eyes. We'll keep our eyes
please.
On it.
I want to see more.
Because I'm interested, you know. But our last thing that we'll talk about today, because I mean, it's just so good. Drew Mother Flippin' McIntyre has been cooking. My guy is doing some incredible work right now. From the fact that, and it's funny because last week we talked about how Hangman and Drew, their stories are very similar in that they view themselves as the good guy in this situation, and they every good heel should. It's part of the reason why Lex Luthor is like one of the greatest bad guys ever. You know,
you're the good guy in your story.
Read, I think it's Lex Luthor Cacophony, was it? It was a really good comic where it's all seen from Lex Luthor's perspective. And he sees Superman as a demon, right? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
But in this situation, Drew sees himself as the good guy here. He has been winning matches through pure happenstance of things just going sideways, whether it's the bloodline showing up and Drew getting the first clean pin on Cody since he came to the WWE. He then conveniently found himself in a situation where Logan Paul decided to sucker punch Randy Orton because Randy Orton eliminated him because of the most telegraphed RKO out of nowhere from all time. And that just led to Drew winning. And then he comes out and then you can see how happy he is, how proud he is. And the crowd is like, not sure where to go. They don't know if they want to cheer him, if they want to boo him, mostly booing right now. But there's still that like, hey, Drew, you're going to get your moment kind of vibe. And then, of course, he goes to the back. He sees Jey Uso. And then he's like, hey, man, all this stuff that's happening to you, you deserve it. And you're thinking to yourself, damn, that's messed up. Why would he say that? But you know what? He's right. Because guess what? Jay does deserve it. Jay doesn't deserve an opportunity to hold a title. He was in a bloodline. He made people's lives miserable. Oh, sure. Just because he's main event Jay now and is a good guy? No. Like, there should be some kind of, like, follow-through and consequence there. And they're kind of sort of doing that. And I really enjoy that aspect of it. What do you guys think of Drew? Because I've been loving everything that we've been getting from him.
I like him. I think he's... I think he's cooking on all cylinders. Man, he's got time. This CM Punk feud better be real good. This match better be real good.
Well, the other thing too is if Punk gets injured again, it's like what happens then? You know, like because what's his timetable? It's like 5 months, I think it was.
Maybe even longer.
I heard it was six at least. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. But, I mean, you can rehab really well and maybe be back in 4 or 5. But I'm thinking 6 at least. I'm thinking the fall before we see him.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, but that being said, though, is this also too telegraphed? Or is this the right direction to go in? Because they're very clearly saying, Seth, you're not paying attention to the feud. You're not paying attention to the title. You're paying attention to the bloodline. Seth's like, some things, he left the ring. He's like, some things are worth fighting for. You know, you gotta fight for the things you believe in. So, I mean, Jake, it does feel like this is the direction that they want to go in. And I think they're going to put that belt on Drew at Mania.
I 100% think that they're going to do that. And I like how Drew's playing it. He's telling him, he's like, this is what's going to happen, and you don't believe me, and you don't want to hear it, and nobody else wants to hear it. But the writing is on the wall.
I gotta tell you, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And he's just like, he's playing this great, like, anti-hero, like, in a way. Like, it's almost like Punisher-esque. In that, you know, he's giving people what he thinks they deserve. He's playing judge, jury, and executioner. And whether or not you agree with it, it doesn't matter to him. You know, he has an end goal, and he's going to achieve said goal the way that he believes he should and can. And I think it's fascinating. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other people I've seen play it like this, but he's just... it's great because I can't tell.
It's like
tell.
A thank you, like your welcome type of gimmick. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I can't tell. I like that it just all feels very nebulous. He does kind of feel like this. You're like, well, he makes a good point. He didn't have to be a dick about it, but he makes a good point. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's what's, what's so great about it is you're like, When you come across those heels or just, you know, villains and other where you're like, oh no, do I agree with the bad guy? Like that's fun. That's complexity in character development. Yeah. And I
the
love
best
it.
Villains aren't yeah, the best villains often aren't wrong on paper.
Right.
They just go about it in a maniacal way, right? Like Ozymandias wasn't wrong. Like the world needed, like we needed peace. The world needed to be reset, but killing a bajillion people to do it
not
was
the option.
Pretty twisted, right? So, you're like, I get where they're coming from. Like,
Joker, same thing with him. You know, in
CM Punk, straight edge society.
Oh yeah,
dude,
that was a good one.
Being Magneto sober is a wonderful life choice. Yeah, right. All that shit, but they're going about it in a brutal, brutal way.
Yeah, I agree. The story is compelling. I think Drew is really focused in on this character, and they're allowing him that space. It does suck to see, like, oh, you know, Punk not being in that main event, because that would have been really cool to see Rollins and Punk finally in a ring against each other. And that build would have been magical as well. There's still going to be plenty of opportunities to do that. But with Drew now, you give yourself, I think, way more options on where you can go, especially with a returning CM Punk who, you know, if we're being honest here, Punk wasn't looking the best in the feud between him and Rollins. Every time Punk came out, it felt like Punk was the bad guy and Rollins was completely justified. Now, in this new route that they can go, they have a very clear-cut bad guy in Drew. Even though he, again, smartly enough, doesn't believe he's the bad guy, but you have that. And then you can have Punk be the good guy, shows up, you know, takes on Drew because he's been selling his name all these weeks. So to that effect, like, you definitely give yourself something really fun to work with there.
Sure.
But it's whether or not they get there, which...
Always the question.
Always the question, and you can't really rely on that too much. So we'll see what happens, man. But overall, though, a damn good week of wrestling, I would say. Mm-hmm. We had good shows across the board, you know, big updates as well with, like, Will Ospreay. And Will Ospreay is going to be at Revolution. I think he'll be at Dynamite tonight. So we'll see what happens with one of the weirdest booked matches that AEW has done since. Don Callis just saying, you know what? No one's good enough to fight my guy. Instead, I'm going to have him fight my other guy that he's just coming into the company. Because that makes sense.
Sure.
So we'll see if they decide to lean into it or pivot, but not pivot in a way. Like, because I don't think they're, like, pivoting. But I would like to just see Ospreay just kind of address that. That would be kind of cool. How they go about doing that, not too sure. And I guess before we close out, though, are we optimistic about Will Ospreay in AEW? Because, I mean, yeah, he's probably pound for pound, you know, best wrestler in the world right now. But kind of curious what you guys' perspectives are.
I think
he fits.
I think he fits. I think, I mean, he's their kind of guy. I hope they take full advantage of him. I think he's more... having seen a lot of the shit he's done, I think he's also capable of being a bigger character than he often is, beyond just the world-beating 12-star wrestler. Yeah. Like, some of the stuff, you go back and look some of his stuff he's done, even on his way out here, like in Rev Pro, he plays a nasty heel. Some of his United Empire stuff in New Japan, he can be that big boss douchey heel. But he can also be your sprightly babyface. I just hope they take full advantage of him and don't, like, all right, you have a great match. Like, I hope he doesn't.
Does he go babyface first, or does he?
I think he breaks away from the Don Callis family with this match.
Has to, right? I mean, because
he's coming
in
with so much hype, and over the last year, he's had the best matches in the world, all over the world in the last 6 months. He comes in. I think he does is like, well, and the simple little, well, what do you think you're better than us now? Blah, blah, blah. What the fuck? He pushes then, gets out, whatever. I don't know what it is. Some kind of shenanigan. And then, but
shenanigans.
I think for sure if it doesn't happen at Revolution, the catalyst starts then, and he starts going on his own babyface route.
Yeah. Are you excited for Will? Are there any, like, wrestlers coming in potentially that you're pumped for, Jake, or?
I'm interested in Ospreay because my exposure to him has been pretty limited. So I'm excited to see him and I'm excited to see more of him and see how a broader audience reacts to him. Because, yeah, I mean, it's the same thing where I've seen a few things of him, but all I hear is Ospreay is
him.
S tier. Yeah. You know, that's all I hear. Yeah. So I'm excited to see, him with, you know, a machine behind him and see what he can do with it. I think that's going to be exciting. Yeah. And I think he should come in as a face as well, because it just doesn't seem like it seems like everybody in AEW is just trying to be a badass. Like, it just seems like that's what, so I think that they need more. I think they need some more faces. So I think it would be good for him to break away from Callis and start doing his own thing. He can still be a badass, but just, you know, I don't know. It just feels like everybody's just trying to be.
Fascinating how that is, right? Because now that I'm thinking about it, you are 100% correct. Like, I don't know a single white meat baby face that's, like, on AEW TV right now that we're seeing
Cassidy
all the time. Like, everyone.
It's about as close as you come.
That's about the closest. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's about it. And he's also putting on a god tier run of his own with a yet another international championship reign that is honestly been quite impressive. So yeah, lots to talk about for sure. And lots to pay attention to next week. Dynamite's coming up. So make sure you guys tune in for that, but I think we'll go ahead and call it
in my hometown, by the way, my hometown, Huntsville, Alabama. They're in my hometown.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. That's awesome. Yeah.
Where I think TNA started too. I think that was their first televised show they ever did. Was that they filmed
it in Nashville? The first ever show was in Nashville.
I'm going to have to look
at it. Oh, it could have been Nashville. You could be getting your Vills connected.
I don't get my Vills. The Asylum in Nashville was where the company started.
Yeah, because it was a
Well, I know it was one of their first. Yeah.
I'll figure it out.
And I'll come with receipts to the next episode.
Embarrassing for you. Embarrassing.
Yeah, I hate to see this happen to you, crumbling in real time. Yeah, so make sure you guys get out there, like, subscribe. Thank everyone so much for joining us on this journey. It's been so fun. Also, you know, I think we're going to spin up a Discord server so that, you know, more and more people who listen to podcasts can join us and just talk about storylines and be a couple nerds, judgment-free, and just have a good time with it. That's supposed to be the fun of it, because wrestling is fun, and that's, that's the whole point. Yeah, make sure you subscribe on YouTube, like as well, whatever podcast platform you're listening this on. Make sure you just spread the word about this. We have a great time making it, and it seems like a lot of people have been digging it as well. So thank you guys so much for checking out Rebook. We'll see you same time, same place next week, and until then, keep enjoying wrestling. We'll see you soon. Bye.
See ya.